Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Endless Obsession of Between the Baird and Me podcast. I am one of your hosts, John Bernardo, and with me is my dude on the other side, riffing around, Joshua Delaney. How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm great. How are you doing?
Good, man. So this is where I think both of our experience with the band started to slowly tamper off.
Yes.
Not so much, like, I remember coming back for Future Sequence, but I remember this is around a time where I was just, like, tampering off for music for a bit, and I was in and out of, you know, you got phases that were going on and stuff like that.
Oh, but yeah.
I remember, after hearing the album, I remember everything from it. It just seemed like such a distant memory to me.
Yeah, some of this felt very familiar, and, like, other parts of it, it was like hearing it for the first time again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was such a weird, surreal feeling. I'm excited to get into this one and everything that follows us, because it is going to, just like the first two albums, how it's just that new vibe to us.
Yeah.
It's going to have that same thing going the way through, so that's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. From here on out, it's after this album, it's pretty much uncharted territory for me. Like, super hard.
Okay, so you haven't, like, is it that you haven't heard it, or it's just you can't remember anything after this?
A little bit of both. I think I tried listening to the Parallax 2, and I just kind of skimmed it, because that album came out in, like, 2012. And by that point, I was just, like, on a completely different wavelength, like, music-wise. I was listening to a lot of,
you're exploring yourself.
Yeah. musically. But,
you're like, let's get it straight, people. I said musically.
Musically. The Great Misdirect is one where, initially upon release, I was a little disappointed with it, because I think I was just expecting another Colors, and and I think it didn't immediately resonate with me, so I just kind of dashed it off to the side and was like, oh well, whatever. Dillinger Escape Plan's putting out something in 2010, so and then they did, and it was awesome. But now upon listening to it again, I don't know if we should save our final thoughts for the actual final, but I got some interesting opinions on this one.
Yeah, because you told me that you have a take coming, and I told you I have a take coming, and who knows where they're going to come from, but
this might be the last episode of the Endless Obsession. No, I'm just kidding.
You're talking about it being not Colors 2. I think that, like, listening to it, they definitely did that on purpose, because the songs do not fuse in together naturally. Up to from track 3 into track 4, it's two completely separate songs. I would say that the last two songs maybe go into each other, but that would be about it.
Yeah, this feels like kind of it's more like separate vignettes almost. Like, they wanted to do, like, separate songs, but they really wanted to go in on the compositions and stuff, and that's why the songs are incredibly long, save for, like, two of them.
Yeah, well, we got our longest one yet, which is 17 minutes.
Yeah.
Let's just jump into it, shall we?
Yeah.
All right, so we have track number one, Mirrors, which is not it's not a cover by the popular song by Justin Timberlake,
as
you may have thought it would have been. and it goes without saying, but this one came out in 2009.
Yes.
It came out in October. It was recorded in June to July of 2009. Still the same lineup, as you know right now, with Tommy, Dan, Blake, Paul, and Dusty. This one was released on Victory, and still Jamie King at the helm producing this album, because he's the man that knows it.
Yes.
Into the song here. So the first track, Mirrors, this is at a 3:38 time. And with the music on this one, I would say that on the intro track, like, comparing it to Colors, which was also a very chill, like, intro.
Yeah.
This is the same concept, but this one felt, it was more of a fleshed out song.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, whereas the other ones felt like an intro, this one felt like a song.
Yeah, the intro to Colors is definitely all about that build-up. It's like, we're going to, you know, kind of start off kind of low-key and kind of brooding, and then just build into this crescendo of noise, and then, you know, lead right into the second track. This one is just like, it's a great tone setter, I got to say, but it's unlike anything they've done up to this point, kind of. I mean, they've always, they've known when to slow it down and go, like, clean with the vocals, but for, like, an intro, for them to just have, like, this is just, like, a normal 3.5 minute song.
And I would say what I really liked about the guitars were that, I feel like I've described this in the past, but it's just, it's melodically dark. Like, it balances in between very dark and very just like haunting, atmospheric, and then it effortlessly transfers into more uplifting melody. Like, they do that so well, where it goes in between those two kind of styles so easily.
Yeah, when it gets like 2 minutes into this track too, and it starts sounding like really blissful almost.
Yeah, exactly.
Like you're kind of, it's like peaceful.
Yeah, but even in the main little lick, I don't even know if you call it a lick when it's a clean guitar like that, but just in that four bars itself, it goes from a dark sound to a melodic sound all within that little step, and it's fantastic.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was gonna say, I really just like I like the progression of the song too, you know. They could have just kind of done something a little repetitive for the intro to like set the stage, but it has its own little like pieces, and
exactly,
it just really goes to show like how honed their skills are at this point.
When it comes lyrically, definitely some short lyrics. Everything's a novelty. Everyone grows but me. Close one eye, step to the side. Everyone grows, but everyone's in fragments. Close one eye, step to the side. It really stretches that out a bit. When it comes to meanings, people are saying that the close one eye and step to the side is basically a very compact description of the method of parallax. Again, with the parallax.
We're getting there.
Yeah, we're so close. And then it said, in this method, you can measure how far away a horizontal object is by closing one eye and changing your viewpoint in the perpendicular direction to the object. By measuring the angle of the object's apparent displacement relative to some background, you can determine how far it is away from you. Yeah. What the metaphorical meaning of this is, nobody knows. It could have to do with attempting to understand the ideas that are difficult to see from our perspective, but Tommy seems to be using a lot more terminology related to optics recently, so like in parallax and specular reflection. So it could have to do with that. Also, I looked up parallax, and it's not something they made up. It's a thing, and it's the definition is the effect whereby the position or direction of an object appears differ when viewed from a different position. So just like that, the description was earlier. We'll see how that definition kind of ticks into it. Do you have anything to touch on the lyrics before we move on?
No, not really. I was gonna say the only parallax I'm like remotely familiar with is parallax scrolling and like old like Super Nintendo video games where they'd have the background, like the background perspective would change depending on how you move.
Oh, okay.
And it's like,
I know what you mean. Like,
oh, I get it now.
So the next song, Obfuscation?
Obfuscation.
Obfuscation?
Yeah.
Is that how you think it's said?
I mean, I'm pretty sure that is. Because obfuscate is to like, basically to obscure something, to make it like unclear.
Obfuscation.
Obfuscate.
I just had a robot tell it to me in my ear. Obfuscation.
Yeah, Google Pronounce Man said obfuscate, but
exactly. Obfuscate, so that's what we're gonna go with.
Yeah, I was gonna say I'll trust Google Man, but
we'll go with Google Man.
Google Man.
So a lot of people. We'll start from lyric content on this one, and people are saying that the song is telling you not to believe everything you see. Always going to be a different meaning, but like that's what a lot of people are kind of getting to the point of what it can mean. They think it's about the limits of the nervous system as exhibited in humans, and it deals with perception, or rather our primitive foundation which direct our senses. Okay.
Yeah. So, like the first verse is talking about change blindness, which it was capitalized, so I looked it up, and it's change blindness is a perceptual phenomenon that occurs when a change in a visual stimulus is introduced and the observer does not notice. And it's like, oh, geez. So they're getting into some like really heady shit with this, especially, you know, like people were saying about the intro, getting into stuff with like optics and stuff.
Yeah. And then they mentioned something, there will always be a Marfa, but that's a town in Texas. So I don't know if there's a different definition to that, or I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's what we're, a lot of the things we're getting here, they're saying that it's kind of like how you, well, similar to how you're saying, but different at the same time. We are basically being blinded constantly from the truth and the purpose of this thing we call reality. We are locked in this physical shell of obfuscation.
Obfuscation.
Is the concealment of intended meaning in communication, making communication confusing, intentionally ambiguous, and more difficult to interpret. Jesus.
Sorry. There's something with Marfa. It's a small town in West Texas that is currently known for unusual UFO-like lights that appear in the area near the town.
So maybe it's like definitely where it is actually telling it. It's starting the story of what they're going to deal with in the parallax.
Yeah, that's what I'm
something
wondering.
Something to do with this town, maybe. Yeah. Let's jump into it musically.
Oh, Jesus.
Go ahead. What do you got?
I thought this would be like the most dense track on the album, and it's very much not, but it is very dense still.
Define dense.
Just a lot of like change ups, a lot of like musical content. The way it hops around from one idea to another while staying consistent. It's just very like, I don't know how to describe it, but this is the band that like they're thickest. Like with two C's. Like,
I was gonna say, is it with two C's?
Yeah, absolutely. And like I feel like this is them just like, it's almost like a victory lap for Colors. Like Colors did so well, they're like, all right, let's just do like the most prog-ass prog record we can think of right now, and like six songs, an hour long, and like we're just gonna pack it. Like, you want downtime? Fuck you. We're good.
We'll get a little bit of downtime.
A little bit as a treat, but yeah. I don't know. This song goes all over the damn place, and like it's 9 minute runtime, and I don't know if I have anything like profound to say other than that it rips.
Oh boy. Hold on to your tits, buddy. I'm about to take you home.
Oh no.
So, the song clocks in at 9:15, like you said.
Yes.
So you've heard of the term tropes, right? You know, anime tropes,
yeah,
sitcom
tropes.
So I have BT Bam tropes, where like they do a lot of, you know, anybody that writes music, they have things that they go back to.
Yeah, a playbook.
That's not what exactly. Like, not that they write the same riffs, but they kind of do similar patterns or similar ideas. And you can hear a lot of their sounds follow like similar, you know, keys, chord progressions, things like that, right? Like they do that a lot. And right when the song kicks in, like all of that lead, it just all sounds like I've heard this before.
Oh.
It doesn't sound inspiring or new to me at all. It feels like the most dated thing that they've done. It doesn't feel like they've moved forward at all.
I will say it definitely seems like they're resting on their laurels a bit. This was released as the one and only single from the album. So I feel like it was just like I feel like it was the only one they could release as a single, because it's like, well, this is one of the shorter songs on here.
Oh yeah, you're right. Yeah, technically it's the shortest metal song.
But I guess as like as a teaser for the album, this was probably the best one they thought that they could throw out there. Not like, hey, we're releasing the damn near 18 minute song as our lead single.
Could
get
you
hyped.
Imagine?
Oh, that would be amazing. People do that nowadays, and like, these guys could have been ahead of the game.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's a part that comes in around 104. It's like that. It has that lead that
That did sound very familiar to me, yeah.
Right? It does. And there's a part where when that ends, it's both guitars, the bass is doing its thing, and the drums are doing like double kicks.
Yeah.
And they're both going, they're just kind of like licking over each other, and they don't match up, which is fine. But they just constantly clash together, and it goes on for too long. The only time I started actually enjoying the song was at the 5 minute mark, which is where there's that. It's like doon 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 doon, and there's like a bass.
Oh yeah, that bass
solo.
Is awesome.
Yeah, and then it's just Dan and Blake just like with that sweet drum beat, and then I'm pretty sure it's Dusty that's doing the solo on this, but yeah. It's such like a weird jazzy ghost type solo. It's just all over the place. There's no real rhythm to it. Just kind of like. Yeah, he's just flowing with the music, and he's just kind of like hitting it wherever he can. And that everything after the 5 minutes, great. If they made the song, if it was from then on, I would have enjoyed it a lot more. But the first 4.5 minutes, I was like, this is not what I'm expecting.
I definitely agree. It's not like the highlight of this album. We'll get to that. But I think for me, it kind of goes in and out so easily. It's like, I don't mind having this kind of build to that moment 5 minutes in. So it didn't bother me too much. But yeah, there are a lot of like familiar, like they opened up the Between the Buried Me playbook, and we're like, yeah, let's do this, this, and this. 'Cause people like when we do that, people like that. Okay. Hey, follow me, guys. All right, here. And then,
yeah. Exactly. Like you see what you mean. Like it doesn't do anything. Like plenty of reviews have said, you know, it doesn't make any leaps. Like there's lots of things that they do some really cool things, but at the same time, they're resting on a lot.
Yeah. You know? Which, I mean, they're good at what they do.
They are. And it almost felt like, you know, this was kind of taking a break in a way.
Yeah. Like I said, it felt like a victory lap almost. Like, hey, we kicked ass last album. Here's our... Just like, it's not a throwaway album. There's definitely a lot of thought put into this project, but it's almost let's kind of do this thing that we've probably had on our minds. Like, let's just go out, like, you know, let's do these fucking 12-minute songs. Let's like go even beyond Colors and Ambition in some ways, while also like, you know, having some familiarity there.
All right. Well, there's a little bit of the spin for you. I know you didn't really think that one was coming.
Josh loves overblown indulgent prog rock. News at 11, and it's only going to get better from here for me because
I'm very curious to see where you rank this. Let's jump into. Disease, Injury, Madness, which is, I believe, roughly 11 minutes, give or take.
Yes, 11 minutes and 3 seconds, according to Apple Music.
There we go. There we go. now we're back into it. We're back into the, like, the straight punch you in the gut.
Chugging ass. Dun, dun, dun,
yeah.
Dun, dun.
Yeah, no, you're close. There was a part like right during I like that part, and it's really, really, really cool. And I don't remember the lyric. I think he was saying make a left. No, that's not what he was saying. What was he saying? He's saying something. And I think it was with that I am your new mind, I am your new you. There's this kind of back and forth with the vocals, the guitars, and the drums. Like they all work together to kind of make this pattern work. It was really, really cool. And then when it gets into that around 2 minutes 20 seconds, it gets into this beautiful clean breakdown, which is the first song was, the second song was missing. And it ends around the 4:58, and when it comes back, it brings back in either the original riff from the beginning or one of the riffs that have come up to this point, and it's not like you slowly hear the guitars get louder or like the toms dun 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 dun.
Yeah.
You don't hear anything. It kind of like just rings. It finishes and then dun, 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 and it's. I felt it in my gums, man. I felt it in my gums. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah, I had like noise-canceling headphones on full blast. And like, I could
even notice
that too. I was like, oh, geez, this is like reverberating through my body right now.
Yeah, it's like the music is sonically telling your body, shh, are you relaxed right now? And then, dun, 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 just fucking go break out, your fucking wrist.
Punch people. You don't need a good exactly. reason. You're just angry.
I needed a reason to punch some shit.
What do you think of that solo that's like, what, like seven minutes and 20-ish seconds in?
That's what I was going to get to. So like right before that, around 6:40, I don't even know what it's described, like Southern rock maybe, but they have an organ in the background too. And it just feels very 70s to me. Especially, and there's that random horse.
It's almost kind of like Southern or like glam rock almost in a way.
I wouldn't put it under
maybe not
glam.
Total glam.
Yeah, but it's definitely older classic. And that's another thing. A lot of classic inspirations on, especially the guitar solos, which I don't even know if they've really done guitar solos like this before. Like the other albums, sure, there's ripping and shredding and all that kind of crap. But
is there a cowbell in that part too?
I wrote that I felt like there might be a cowbell, but I couldn't. Was it the song, or I think it might be the next song, but I thought, yeah, I definitely heard cowbell in one of these songs. It didn't sound like a clean cowbell, so it could have been something else.
Yeah, see, full prog, I'm telling you.
Yeah, exactly. But like the guitar solos here sound like solos, whereas before, you know, you couldn't tell if it was a solo or if it was a lead, you know, it just kind of flowed differently. But here they're classic solos, like traditional.
That's
what you're talking about. It's so good, and it's like 3 minutes of that back and forth with those solos.
It's just like, it's like they're pulling from so many like different wells of inspiration for this album in general, but like this bit in particular feels very much like that kind of, I don't know, that like mid to late 70s era of rock.
Yeah.
Except, and, of course, with like a modern spin.
For the most part, it works in their favor. But like, as we know with some other songs, it starts to affect it in some ways. So lyrically, I want to hear your thoughts on the musically. But basically, from what I'm hearing, let's see what we got here. The song, I think the song has nothing to do with religion and Satan. I think it's evident. It's about a man who is trying to end humanity for the good of the world. And some other people are thinking it seems like an anti-Scientology song, or at least a song that could be rallying against the same inherent abilities of certain humans to control subordinate populations through cultism. Let's read this. What do you got here?
Verse 5, I am a cult by definition. I am a friend by first impression. My task to recycle this earth, to not repeat human history.
Wait. Oh, you said first line. That's like freaking halfway through.
Oh, no, I said
song.
Verse 5. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
My stupid
you jackass.
No.
What do you think lyrically, musically? What are your thoughts on this one?
Overall thoughts. I love this one. This is where things started to really click for me for the album.
Yeah, exactly.
Where I was like fully on board, even though I like obfuscation. Even though I like that one a lot and I like the intro a lot, this is where I was like, oh man, I should have given this more of a chance back when I first listened to it. Lyrically, I think it's very cool. I think there are a lot of really good lines. Overall, yeah, this is probably one of my favorite, not my favorite on the album, but it ranks high up there.
Okay. And lyrically?
Lyrically is very cool. I think what you said, like what you were reading, some of the different interpretations of, I think that kind of lines up to, like, I could see this definitely being about Scientology, because Scientology at that point was, I think that was probably around the time when it was being reported pretty heavily, like the Tom Cruise, John Travolta stuff. I can't remember when
2009, yeah.
When the infamous South Park Scientology episode was.
Oh,
had it been a little earlier? I can't remember. I might have still been in school. I can't remember, though. That was a long time ago.
A wee little bit, Joshua.
Yeah. Little high school Josh was Weird Al hair.
Did you really?
Yeah, I'll send you a picture sometime. it's fucked up. It was 2005, the Scientology episode. But I mean, Scientology was still definitely being like talked about a lot because like you had Anonymous leaking like documents and stuff around that era, and so I could see Between the Buried and Me looking at everything happening with that and being like, man, Scientology sucks.
It does. It definitely does.
Yeah, no, cool song. I really like this one.
So, all right. Well, that's good. I think that's all I got on that one. So let's move on to the next track.
Oh, yeah.
Fossil Genera, A Feed from Cloud Mountain.
A real slobber knocker.
This title makes no sense to me. Like, none of that makes any sense to me.
It sounds like part of a ridiculous multi-album concept thing. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if it is or not.
I would say that this is
fuck
one of my favorite starts to a song.
Yeah, it sounds like you're about to get your fucking ass kicked in a saloon.
Oh my god, you know what? That's what it was. I was trying to think. I'm like, is this a circus? No, it's a circus in a saloon.
Yeah, it's like that baby grand piano, just like that jaunty swingy sound.
Yeah, I couldn't put my finger on it, but you're right. It's a saloon. That's perfect. Yeah, way to saloon core. Saloon core.
Oh, I love it though. Yeah. Also, I said fuck randomly there because I just made that joke about this probably being part of like their big multi-album concept, and I looked at the Genius annotation that says an introduction to the Night Owls, a force of alien life that controls humanity. The Night Owls are further elaborated on in the story from the Parallax 1 and 2 EP and the album by Between the Buried and Me.
It does not end. I cannot wait. We need to Parallax is next.
Yeah, yep,
so that's a big one. Like, start taking your time now. You need to go through that with a fine-tooth comb. Like,
yeah, I'm about to go to that Reddit and just get fucking lost in there.
This is our Infinity War endgame.
Yeah, right? This is the big one.
Yeah, we need to get there. I saw some other similar people talking about how this is, alien related. Now these five men are alien themselves, sent to warn us of the impending doom about our befall our entire earthly civilization in so many ways, wrought by the siblings of their own kind. Think about how they blend the best singular elements from every damn musical style known to man into a soup to warm your soul in the darkest, coldest place in your mind.
Dope.
They are drug... He's describing the band right now.
Yeah.
They are drug-free. They are drug-free. They are all vegan, or at least vegetarian. I'm ashamed to admit, I don't care about that stuff. Their religious affiliation appears to be null, though they seem spiritual. It's almost too good. Nah, screw that. It's awesome. I notice how the smart ones really latch onto it, as if this sound was a beacon to the would-be heroes of a forsaken race. Us. I hate to sound like a worshiper or an elitist, but damn, it's good. this one's definitely my favorite song on the album.
I think it is... probably is for me too, next to the last one, but my god, yeah, the way the song kicks off is incredible. It has this like vaudevillian performance aspect to it, like even down to his vocals, he's just like extra performative.
This is what I thrive for in new BT BAM is like these weird, obviously I love it when it's just riffing, but I really love when they mix it with this kind of stuff and really make it crazy.
They've had a kitchen sink approach for the longest time, and you can really see that on this album.
Yeah. And near the end, and I could be wrong, but I feel like this is the first, there's a string section. I feel like this is the first time I've heard any sort of orchestration that wasn't just kind of keyboard. It sounded actual orchestra.
It sounded organic. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't recall ever hearing that in the back, but, yeah, other than that, really love the song. There's like a mellow part breakdown that's just gorgeous. And there's another, I love it when they kind of play with the timing of a riff where it'll start playing one way with the drums going a certain beat, and then the riff will keep playing and it'll... the drums will play its own way. It's that riff that goes...
yeah.
Like it's that really fast picking one. Oh, love that part.
The part at like 7 minutes and 45 seconds in, where it's like, it almost reminds me of like a Mr. Bungle song in like a lot of ways, like a Mike Patton joint. It just has this
That's the breakdown I'm thinking of, yeah.
Yeah, it has like a circusy bit to it, and it's just like, it's like terrifying and awesome, and like, it's just like, this is like their most like performative song, I feel like.
And like, yeah, and you know, they're actually performing this album in its entirety right now, so it'd be great to see how quickly pull up YouTube videos and you can see, but it's great to see how they would perform this one live.
He needs to wear a top hat when he's playing this song, because I feel like he's like a circus guy and he's just like, welcome.
And like a curtain, and like he walks through the door.
Yeah.
the saloon door.
There's just rings of fire everywhere.
Rings of fire. Where
just like lions jumping through loops and shit, and just go all out, man. Get a big budget for this.
Yeah, I like how some bands just like bring like a whole production with them. Yeah,
you got like an Alice Cooper type thing.
Oh yeah, or Iron Maiden. They go nuts.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they do. Yeah.
I know you've kind of already touched on a few, but where else do you want to touch on with this song?
Not much else. You mentioned the mellow part that kind of comes in like around 9-ish minutes. I really like that bit. I feel like his clean vocals are like the best I've ever been to. I don't know if that's a hot take. They were really good on Colors, but I feel like here it's just like he's really like showing off a bit more range vocally.
He definitely gets better with every album.
Ooh, yeah, I'm excited then. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I think he's like, you've seen it from the beginning. His clean vocals just continue to get better and better. Because
like, I'd kind of dread the presence of the clean vocals like in the first couple albums, not totally dread, because like Silent Circus had a couple really good moments, but like here it's just like, oh man, this is awesome. Like, he really sounds good now.
Yeah. All right, let's get on to the biggest departure of any album so far.
Yes.
Desert of Song. We got our first country song here.
Yeah, yeehaw, man.
Take a wild shot. You noticed that there were some extra different vocals, right?
Yeah.
Who do you think that was?
I honestly could not tell you. Is it one of the band members, or did they get an outside guy?
No. It's one of the band members.
Aww. I'm going to just take a stab in the dark and say it was the lead guitarist.
Well, they're both lead guitarists.
The one that doesn't sing?
Oh, no. Technically, Dusty is a rhythm guitarist. So, yes, you are right. Oh. It is the lead guitarist, Paul Wagoner.
Oh, okay, cool.
I was very surprised. I was like, oh, look at that. So, you know,
nice.
Good on Paul.
Damn, good job, dude.
Yeah. Exactly. Giddy that's up. It. Definitely biggest departure. I don't have many notes on this other than, you know, it's obvious a lot of people are calling it the weakest. It's definitely different. With Mirrors, I didn't feel like we needed another fully kind of clean song, but again, it's their country song, and I'm okay with it.
Yeah, honestly, like I said, I love this song. I really love it. Like, I think it's definitely not the weakest to me, but I could definitely understand if someone said that. If they said that this was the weakest, like, oh, yeah, I get it. But for some reason, for me, I was just like, this is an awesome little change of pace for him.
I would still say Upfuckstation is probably definitely my least favorite.
Upfuckstation.
Just because of my reasons for it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's not much more to this one. This one's 5 minutes, 34 seconds. It's a long one for one of this style.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's not just like a little interlude this time. It's like, we're going to make a full-ass song out of this. And, yeah, I love it. I think it's really cool.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else you want to add to this one?
No, I think that's all I got.
Okay. So let's roll right into it. Let's get out of the desert and let's swim to the moon.
Quick little track here to talk about. You know, I don't think we have much to
just,
say.
Just
here.
A quick filler track.
It's okay, you know, it's
17 minutes. 17 goddamn minutes. And almost 18 minutes.
Yeah, basically 18. It's like,
yeah, so they're doing this. They're doing this song live right now. Like, I can't imagine how you remember an 18-minute song like that. It's insane.
Yeah, I always think of, like, the band Yes. one of my favorites. They have an album called Tales from Topographic Oceans, and it is only four tracks, and each track is 20 minutes. And I'm like, how did they play this live? How do you remember?
Well, we're only one way to find out is to watch a live video.
Yeah.
So I really like the xylophone type intro in the beginning.
Yeah.
Like that was pretty cool. We don't get vocals until 2:40.
Yeah.
Which guest vocals on this song were done by Chuck Johnson, who is I believe is a country artist or something in that range. Let's see what he did here.
His name is Chuck.
Pedal steel guitarist is what he is. So, and you hear that a lot with like the later in the song, you'll hear like a sliding, you know, when they put that little cylinder on their finger and they can slide the guitar up and down.
Yeah.
Yeah. They have that in the song as well.
Yeah.
So you notice some of that inspiration in there. I love the verse. The verse has great groove to it. There's a chorus around the 5 minute mark that hits some great melodies. The song really kind of goes all over the place with some great parts. And I can't tell if they're kind of Arabic, Spanish infused. It could be a little bit of both. It kind of sounds like a mix of both. And then when the chorus comes in around the 9 minute mark with the lyrics about swim to the moon, that really topped it off for me there.
Yeah,
I can keep going, but I'm gonna stop here, and I want you to keep going. Tell me about your thoughts on the song.
Yeah, so this one, honestly, when I was revisiting this album, I was like, oh god, here comes the big one. Is this gonna be able to like keep my attention? Like, am I gonna get bored? And no, the complete opposite of what happened. I was completely compelled through this whole thing in my revisit. Even like I listened to this album, like even today before recording, I listened to it like three times in a row. I just keep running it back.
Oh, wow.
So I wouldn't forget any parts, and I still forget some parts, but yeah, no, this pretty much what you said, like 9 minutes in, that chorus is just very like soaring and triumphant, and like it's just a very big centerpiece to this album, or I mean the song. So I think there's like an organ solo somewhere in there, like 12 minutes in, or it's not really, I don't know if it's really a solo, but the organ gets to go off.
It's fucking
dope. It's, I don't know, it's kind of a solo. I'm kind of playing it back now. They definitely just let them flex, which is awesome.
Yeah, and they're doing a bunch of really, really cool things. And again, they're coming back to the guitar, the classic rock guitar solos.
Yes.
Like they're really bringing it in, and
it's going nuts.
I don't know why they decided to go through that, but like I'm here for it, you know. I love in the classic, like I was gonna say maybe it was inspired by them doing The Anatomy of, but that came out before Colors.
So yeah.
I don't know if that's it exactly. But yeah, the drum work's insane.
Oh,
like
God,
some of the best drum work. And I really like how Blake is playing, how he's drumming to the solos. Like there's some parts with the solos that he is drumming to them in the way that they are playing their patterns. He's hitting the drums to that.
Yeah, I was like, kind of running the section back, and I heard exactly that part you're talking about, and it's like, oh god, yeah.
Exactly. My thing with the song is, and the 17-18 minute time span just flies by.
Good pacing.
for sure. They go back into the chorus at the end. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, there's this, you know, subdued clean part that's going on, and it kind of hits on similar musical themes that they've hit throughout this whole song. And then right after that, it kind of rings, and then it go into the swim to the moon chorus with some crazy riffage at the end to top it off.
Mm-hmm.
And it really felt like, okay, guys, I was fine with the first 16 minutes. You went too far. I feel like they could have ended it at this clean part and would have been a great way to end the album. But instead, they pushed it a little bit further, and just had to add it one more time, and I feel like it it really, at that point, I was like, okay, enough. You've put, like, you're done.
Yeah, I feel like they were like,
didn't need to come back.
This is it. This is the last song on the album. We need to just, like, we need to run it back and, like, in this shit high. And yeah, it does drag just a tiny bit near the end there, but man, when you, like, 99% of your track is, like, excellently paced and just dope, it's just like, yeah, it's all right.
I would say, looking at the lyrics, I would say it's kind of, people are saying like it can mean anything, but it sounds like it's about themselves. Especially if you're looking at the lyrics, it's the radio stopped tuning, the static is forbidden, the chords quit a strumming, but we found our new home. And you know, they had a lot of issues with labels and like actual record labels and genre labels and things like that. So
yeah,
this could be them talking about how, you know, they're in their own world of a genre. They're pushing their own boundaries, and they're getting out of poisonous relationships with them. But there's no set meaning that I've been able to find here. But reading the lyrics, I feel like this is pretty much like what they're describing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's like an interview from White Noise Metal, Tommy Rogers concurred that Swim to the Moon draws parallels to Son of Nothing from the album Colors. And he goes on to say, it's kind of an awakening. The story doesn't have an ending yet, maybe. I kind of left it open-ended in case I wanted to touch on it at some other point. It's about a businessman who needs something new in his life. He goes to the sea and basically floats and sees where it takes him. It gets him in a lot of trouble. It's kind of like Son of Nothing. It's his thought process evaluating everything he's done and everything he wants to do, what's important and what's not important. Because I think those are the kinds of things that I personally, over the last few years, have kind of looked into. There's so much shit that people worry about that really doesn't matter. There are only certain things that really make an impact on your life and others. And I guess those stories are about figuring out what I need in my life. And, just as a little addition, he goes on to note that Swim to the Moon is a prequel to the Parallax Saga. So, you know, just in case you were wondering about that. But I don't know. That explanation is pretty awesome. Especially about, like, worrying about shit that doesn't ultimately matter in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of resonates when you have, like, anxiety and stuff. So it's just like, damn.
Oh,
I get it.
Well, mental health issues out the wazoo, right?
Yeah.
So, well, that's it. That's the album.
Yeah.
Here we go. Let's talk about it overall. What's your overall thoughts on it? And just give me your vibe. I don't even know what I'm saying. Just give me your vibe.
Yeah, no, I get you. So, you know, as I said, like at the beginning of this, back when it first came out, I was pretty lukewarm on it. I was kind of in another lane in regards to music taste. And I was kind of just expecting another Colors, which was not good on my part. You know, artists should be allowed to make what they want. And I don't have to be presumptuous. But revisiting it now for the purpose of this podcast, it's quickly, like, shot up to be, like, one of my favorite works of theirs so far. It's, you know, even though they do kind of rest on their laurels in a lot of ways, and they do kind of get into that blown out, indulgent prog rock thing that, like, some music critics sneer at, I understand, it's all valid, all criticism is valid, but something about this time around really clicked with me, and I'll save my final ranking for that section, but I came away loving this album, like, a lot more than I initially did, and I'm really happy with it. Definitely glad I finally came around only 12 years later.
Hey, better 12 years than no years, yeah. I guess. For me, it's in this weird spot where they do a lot of cool things, but I don't know as an album if it's enough for me to rank it high enough. You know, I think when it first came out, when I was young, every next thing that came out was always the best thing. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
The next album comes out, it's like, oh, this is the best album. Oh, this one's the best album.
Recency,
oh,
no,
this
one's bias. The best one.
Exactly. Yeah, you mentioned that before. But now it's not like that anymore. You know, I can tell the difference, especially when you're listening to it like this. And with a lot of the things I said, out of six songs, to really only enjoy half of the album more than anything is it's not good. And I guess this can kind of go into the ranking pool. Now we can slowly segue into that, but this is really hard to rank. So right now, and I think we might have to make separate lists here.
Because this is where we have our Pokemon Red and Blue moment.
Exactly. So we both have Colors number one.
Yes.
And we both have Alaska number two. Mm-hmm. We have this Silent Circus at number three. And we have self-titled at number four. Let me finish.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so, currently. Okay.
Yes, currently. Currently. I'm doing it the kind of funny way.
Okay.
Obviously, if some people don't know Kind of Funny, there's just some podcast group and they do a lot of ranking episodes. But I'm going to do it their way where they list it out and then it's like, where are we putting X? So that's our listing. I am having a really hard time deciding whether it goes to number two above Alaska or number three below Alaska. And I'm leaning a bit more towards under Alaska. And I think it's just because it could be a little bit of nostalgia. I think it's just how it sits with me.
Yeah.
And technically, Alaska, like, there are similarities. Alaska is almost an extension of the Silent Circus, whereas Great Misdirect is, you know, them kind of doing everything, especially not Colors, but they're expanding more on a lot of the things they learned in Colors, right?
Yeah.
So again, it's a hard call for me, but and I'm gonna probably wrestle with this for a long time, but I think I'm going to have to say that I'm putting this under Alaska.
That's not bad.
It might even go under Silent Circus, though.
Ooh, oh, okay. See,
this, it might even go under Silent
Circus. I thought we would be on like complete opposite ends of the spectrum. I thought you'd have it like either dead last or just above their self-titled. And it's my second favorite. I would put it above Alaska, so I would go Colors and then The Great Misdirect.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'm gonna leave it under Alaska. So I'm gonna go Colors, Alaska, The Great Misdirect, and then Silent Circus and self-titled.
Nice.
I'd need to give Silent Circus another listen, but yeah. I think I'm good with this ranking. I think I'm good with that.
Yeah, I'm happy with where I'm at too. And you know, rankings are fluid. You change your.
It might change stuff after. Funny enough, on Metacritic, it's actually their low. Well, Metacritic is missing a lot of albums, but great. They have everything from The Great Misdirect on, and Great Misdirect is the lowest ranked album.
Yeah, I noticed that. Which, like,
yeah,
I get it.
Automata 2 is their highest ranked, and to me, Automata 2 is the I skipped those albums just because of my time in my life, and when I listened to them again this year, I was like, holy shit!
Yeah, I'm excited to listen to those. I and the thing with like music critics especially, it's like of course this is so much smaller than what I'm about to reference, but I call it the Pinkerton effect, because when Pinkerton, Weezer's second studio album after the Blue album, came out, it was probably the most like eviscerated album of all time. Critics were just baffled by it. They fucking hated it, just trashed it. Rivers Cuomo was like, this shit ruined my life for a bit. And then like 10 years later or so, it got a bit of a reevaluation, and soon it started getting stacked up next to the Blue album, and some people like it even better than the Blue album. So it got like this critical reappraisal from like a new generation. So with like critics of any medium, it's important to always look in a vacuum and stuff. Of course, you know, people might still feel the same about The Great Misdirect, because it is very much like a come down from Colors, so it's easy to look at that and go, yeah, this is disappointing compared to Colors. But in a vacuum, I kind of see The Great Misdirect as just like a sidestep of like, we're gonna do this shit real quick, we're gonna like flesh out like our biggest prog inhibitions. But you know, maybe The Great Misdirect will get some kind of reappraisal once they start touring it and stuff again.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, clearly they must have had a lot of praise behind it if they decided to do, you know, they're doing a half a set, they're doing two sets, one hour full of classic cuts, and then another hour full of this whole album. And it definitely has songs that are beneficial to that format. You know,
yeah.
You know, we have... a bunch of songs that people are amazed to see live, but like I said, we're comparing it to as an album right now. But live, I think it'll be a fun experience because they do a lot of fun things. So it would be nice to see how that translates live. But as of right now, it is it's definitely a downer in some ways based on what I was expecting. But up next, we have The Parallax. So that'll be interesting. And maybe we can just decide this on the episode with people listening, but how do you want to treat this? Do you want to treat this as one big episode or two separate episodes? Because, you know, the first album is an EP. It's only half an hour.
That's right, yeah.
And the second album is a full one. I'm not too sure. Maybe people can weigh in on what they want to hear. Go ahead and comment on our Instagram or any one of us on Twitter. Or in our Discord channel, but let us know what you guys want to hear.
Parallax is 72 minutes.
Yes, and then it might do them separate.
Oh, wow.
maybe what we'll do is we'll do them separately, and we'll put out two separate episodes.
Yeah.
It's easier to digest because, the EP itself is 30 minutes.
Wow, yeah, that's like longer than some just full-length albums.
Yep.
My favorite Earl Sweatshirt album is 25 minutes. An album.
Well, let's chip away into this one. That's going to be a lot of fun. But that's for next time. So, if you guys want to follow us on any social media platforms, I could tell you to you here, but you're probably not going to write it down, so it's going to be in the show notes. So just go into the show notes of your podcast app and just click the link. You know where to go. Join the Discord channel if you want to chat in there. A lot of people from the show have been coming in there, so thank you for joining us and talking some shit with us, some nerdy shit. It's not just music. We talk about a lot of other shit. And that's it. So I have been John Bernardo, and you have been...
I have been Jarsh.
You just got Jarsh.
You just got Jarsh. I am Josh Delaney.
All right, Josh, you go ahead and swim to that moon. I'm going to go ahead and not swim to the moon because I can't think of another... I'm just going to go look in the mirror.
You're going to go obfuscate this episode.
I'm gonna go off you skate these nuts.
God damn it. I was waiting for it, dude.
I got nothing, so I went to immaturity. Good night, everybody.
Good night.